and it's wrapped on human surfaces.
Could you press the record button?
Yes.
All right, so first of all, thank you for the invitation. I'm happy to give a talk here. So, what I'm going to talk is about this wrapping of the M5 brains on human surfaces and what are the low energy field theories that one gets in four dimensions. And, so here is the plan of my talk. So, I will start with some motivations and some of the main results one gets from this analysis that in fact motivate interest in studying these systems. Then I will fastly review the case of n equal 2 theories that one gets from wrapping M5 brains. And so I know you had already seminars on this topic. I'm not sure what you discussed. So I will try to review some aspects. Then we will turn to the case of n equal 1 theories, which is less known, and I will study both the field theory and then the gravity dual and the Poisson match between the two. And then I would like to focus on one particular computation that I find interesting, which is the computation of the central charges of the field theory from supergravity. And this will be done with the anomaly polynomial. And then I will conclude with some future directions. Here are some references about what I'm going to talk about. Okay, so the first motivation is that we want to understand the theory on M5 brains. It is a six-dimensional theory. We know it is non-gravitational. It is a local quantum field theory, but it's pretty mysterious because it's not a gauge theory. Now, if you consider a single M5 brain, essentially this theory is known. It's a theory of a self-dual two-form potential, so it's not a gauge theory. And then there are five real scalars and two spinors. However, if you consider multiple M5 brains, then we really know just a few things about this theory. So we know it is super conformal, it has 2,0 supersymmetry, it has some R symmetry, but we don't know much more. We know it describes tensionless strings, which are the ends of M2 brains ending on the M5 brains, but still it's pretty mysterious. So the hope is that studying the compactifications to four dimensions, one can really learn something about the six-dimensional theories itself. Second motivation is S-duality. So we know that one way of understanding S-duality in n equal 4 superior means is the following. We take n M5 brains, we rub them on a torus, and we get n equal 4 superior means. And then the group of S-duality, which is SL2C, is just the group of large different morphisms of the torus. Now, if you consider a higher genus Riemann surface, possibly with punctures, then the group of large different morphisms is larger, and so we should expect a more interesting group of S-dualities. Another motivation is that in doing this analysis, we will find a new infinite family of isolated submeronformal field theories. Isolated means that they don't have marginal couplings, marginal parameters, without Lagrangian description. Actually, studying the S-dualities, this can provide a Lagrangian description for them, but let me stuck to the fact that they don't have a Lagrangian description. And so usually...
I think they know. They like the handle. Right open.
So usually when we study a four-dimensional theory, our starting point is the Lagrangian, is where we derive the properties of the theory. However, this has to be constructed with the case of two dimensions, where there are many theories about which we don't have a Lagrangian description, we don't use a Lagrangian description, nevertheless we can exactly solve the theory, for instance the minimal models, and this is due to the fact that there is a huge symmetry. So it's nice to have here an infinite family of superconformal field theories about which, let's say, we don't know what the Lagrangian description is, and nevertheless, we will be able, due to the symmetries, to derive many properties. So one can try to develop and test ideas on quantum field theories.
Minimal models don't have a Lagrangian description.
I mean, we know what the Lagrangian... Yeah, we have a Lagrangian description in that case, but even if, suppose we don't know what the Lagrangian description is, the symmetry is enough for understanding the theory.
The symmetry is much more powerful.
Right? Yes.
Yes,
but
it's not
true. No, what I mean is that, okay, a Lagrangian was found, this is nice, but suppose we didn't find a Lagrangian, nevertheless we will be able to solve the theory. So, okay, maybe also in this case, at some point we will find a Lagrangian, that is very nice, nevertheless I will be able to say something without having a Lagrangian. This is what I mean. Okay, good. The fourth motivation is that we will see that there are BPS quantities which can be computed exactly in the four-dimensional theory thanks to a newly discovered 2D-4D correspondence found by Aldai Gayot-Tachikawa, where the 2D theory is a Liouville or Toda theory that lives on the Riemann surface where we wrap the M5 brains. So we are used to the fact that in N equal 2 theories there are exactly computable things. For instance, with the Cyber-Witten curve we can compute the BPS spectrum of particles. But here we find new quantities, in particular the nexus of partition function, and then, for instance, the VEV of loop operators and surface operators, and probably many more. So this is a very interesting new idea. Okay. So let me start reviewing the case of N equal 2. So what we do is wrapping N M-fibrins on a Riemann surface, possibly with punctures, with n equal 2 twist. So n equal 2 twist means that actually the normal bundle of the Riemann surface is the cotangent bundle. And if we do this, what we get are, in four dimensions at low energy, n equal 2 superconformal field theories whose diagram reproduces in some sense the Riemann surface. I will call the diagram a Sicilian diagram. And what I mean that it reproduces it means that I can fatten the diagram, and this diagram precisely has the shape of the Riemann surface. Now let me be more precise. So given a Riemann surface with puncture, I can consider pen decompositions. What are they? So I can cut the Riemann surface along one cycles, which are non-intersecting, and I can do this in a maximal way, such a way to reduce to minimal building blocks. And these building blocks are spheres with three punctures. Now these three punctures can be either three holes that derive from cutting the Riemann surface along these cycles, or I can have two holes and one puncture, or I can have one hole and two punctures. Moreover, I can think, so when I cut the Riemann surface, I can think of being there a tube connecting these spheres, so these building blocks. Now, for each decomposition, I can consider a limit in the complex structure moduli space of the Riemann surface in which these tubes are very long. So I have this picture of very long tubes and spheres. We connect either three tubes or two tubes and one puncture, or one tube and two punctures. And so we can try to understand what is the field theory in this particular limit. Now, since I have a very long tube and I'm five brains on this tube, I can first of all reduce on the circle. I get a D4 brain. This means I get an SUN gauge group, and then when the tube is very long, it is a weakly coupled gauge group. So from the tubes, I get weakly coupled gauge groups. On the other hand, there is no limit I can take to make the sphere weakly coupled. And so what the field theory that I get from the sphere, from the triskelion, is an isolated superconformal field theory. If you want a sphere with three punctures, doesn't have any modulus. So the picture I get is that I have these building blocks, which are isolated superconformal field theories. They are a kind of strongly coupled matter, and they are gauged together by weakly coupled groups. Now, the complex structure moduli space of the Riemann surface is the Teich-Muller moduli space, modeled out by the large deformorphism and the permutation of the punctures. Now, it turns out that this group, this moduli space, is equal to the parameter space of marginal couplings of the four-dimensional theory. And the marginal couplings are the gauge couplings of the various gauge groups. And this group gamma that we use to, which is the group of large deformorphisms and permutations, is a group of S-dualities that I call S-self-dualities. What I mean is the following, that this is a group of dualities that map the theory to itself, but with different couplings. So the theory has the same shape, but the couplings are different. This is like in the case of N equal 4 supergamins. However, this is not the full group of S-dualities. It is larger. In fact, for each pen decomposition, I can write down a different field theory that really looks different. And nevertheless, they describe the same physics. So really, the group of S-dualities is the product of the two. And the second type of duality is something like the is a generalization of the Argyris cyber duality, in which you really change the shape of the theory.
Here you don't mean space of exactly marginal couplings, you just mean marginal in the sense of being like the tau of the gauge theory?
I mean exactly marginal couplings.
So these are all, you got a super conformal field theory for each point in moduli space?
Yes. Yes. So you can check that, in fact, changing the coupling is exactly marginal direction. And this matches with the geometric construction, because for each Riemann surface, you wrap the M5 planes and you get a superconformal theory. However, this can be checked in field theory without the geometry. So let me just mention some particularly simple class of theories. I'm sorry for the notation. All these theories are called T, but this is how they appear in the literature.
Sorry, I'm just confused. If you just wrapped on a sphere with no punctures?
No, because the
really has a mass gap.
Yes, in fact, the condition is that the Riemann surface admits a metric with constant negative curvature.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So the only cases which are excluded are the torus without punctures, which is flat. Okay, formally you get n equal 4 Euclidean mills, but in fact you can add a single puncture and you get the same thing. It's still n equal 4 Euclidean mills.
Okay.
And then the sphere 0, 1, and 2 points, these are excluded.
So every other case is like this.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so the first class is Riemann surface without punctures. So in this case, the dual field theory is a field theory without flavor symmetries, because from each puncture I get some flavor symmetry. Some global symmetry. The second example is a Riemann surface with only maximal punctures. So in fact, there is a classification of the possible puncture one can consider on the Riemann surface. I will show what this classification is. And one of these punctures is called the maximal one. It is associated to the maximal possible flavor symmetry, which is SUN. So in this case, I get a field theory with just SUN, a product of SUN flavor symmetry groups. And in this class, a particularly simple example is a sphere with three maximal punctures that I call the TN theory, and it will be for us an important building block. Any questions so far? Okay, so let me spend some more words on this TN theory. So as I said, this is the theory of that I get at low energy if I consider N M5 branch wrapped on a sphere with three maximal punctures. So on the right there is a sketch of the sphere with three punctures. Now what is this field theory? It is n equal 2. It is isolated because there are no parameters associated. It is superconformal. And moreover, from each maximal puncture I get an SUN flavor symmetry. So I have SUN cube flavor symmetry. And on the left, I have a Sicilian diagram that represents it. The meaning of this diagram is that each square is a flavor symmetry, and the trivalent vertex is the theory itself. So this is a kind of generalization of the quiver diagram. In the quiver, there are lines or arrows, which are by fundamental fields. Here we have these trivalent vertices, which are strongly coupled superconformal field theories. Now, what do we know about this theory? So we know it has a Coulomb branch, which is parameterized by dimension k chiral operators, which are these u. So k is the dimension, goes from 3 to n, and then I is an index that counts some multiplicity, goes from 1 to k minus 2. And these are flavor singlets. And then there is also a x branch. I put a question mark because this x branch has not been studied yet. However, we know that it contains dimension 2 chiral operators, which are these mu, and these mu are the moment maps of the flavor symmetries. So there are three of them, and each of them transform in the adjoint of one of the flavor symmetry factors. Now, some simple examples of this TN theory are the following. T2 is the first member. It's just a theory of 8 free half hypermultiplets, so very easy theory. This Q alpha beta gamma, where each index is a doublet of SU2. So in this case, we also have a trivial Lagrangian for the system. However, if you go to the next element, which is T3, we find something highly non-trivial, which is this, let's say, famous E6 theory of Minan and Meshansky. So in this case, what happens? The flavor symmetry naively should be SU3 cubed, But in this case, there is enhancement. It only happens in this case. It goes to E6. And that's it. And that's it. We know what the Cyber-Witten curve is. We know the Coulomb branch, X branch. Nevertheless, we don't have a Lagrangian description of it.
Can you draw a deep NF5 diagram that gives this N and N context?
Yes, I think it's in two slides.
How did you come in?
Sorry, what did you ask?
If the D4 NS5 diagram against this theory at
the moment? Oh, D4 and... No.
No.
I cannot write that diagram, but I can do something very similar, which is a type 2B construction that I will sketch in a moment.
How did you come in 8.15?
So each of these indexes is in a doublet of SU2, so you get 8. And there are half hyper multiplets in the sense that since the symmetry is SU2, the 2 and the 2 bar are the same. And so you can consider just a half hyper multiplet is a fine representation of n equal to supersymmetry. If you want, there are 4 hyper multiplets.
Or 2 SU2 doublet.
4 n equals
2 hypers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you take a bifundamental of hypers, which is SU2 times SU2, then you discover that actually there is another SU2. It only happens for SUN doesn't happen, but for SU2 it happens because the 2 is equal to the 2 bar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So what can we do with these building blocks? So the A building blocks is the TN theory that I discussed so far. One can consider a different triskelion, which is the B, in which I have 2 maximal punctures and 1 minimal puncture. The minimal puncture carries U1, Flavour symmetry, and in this case it is just 1 free hypermultiplet, so what we were saying. And in fact, if you have a 1 free hypermultiplet, you have SUN times SUN, and also there is a U1 that acts on it. And then one can think more generic triskelions in which one has 2 maximal punctures and the third puncture is a generic puncture. I will tell you in a moment what is the classification. Anyway, what can we do? So as I said, we can take 2 of them and then take 2 Flavour symmetries and gauge them together. So from the geometrical point of view, it means that I substitute the 2 punctures with a tube. And from the field theory point of view, it means that I take 2 Flavour symmetries and I gauge them with a gauge group. Now, if I do that with a maximal puncture, what happens is that the gauge group is conformal. It doesn't happen for any gauging, but in this case it happens. And moreover, it is conformal for any value of the gauge coupling. And if I want, I can also do the opposite. So start with the tube, make the tube very long. When the tube is very long, the gauge coupling goes to 0. So really the gauge group is no longer a gauge group, it is a Flavour group. And so I end up with the 2, I split the theory in 2 and I have the 2 Flavour symmetries.
In case C is not another U1, even though you have the
here?
Non-maximal
yeah. Yeah, instead, so here I should have drawn another line, so a 3 vertex, and here I should have put a square with a 1.
And also down in C, same thing.
And here, yes. A square with a 1. And then if you want, you can take 2 of these and glue them together, and what you get is super QCD with NF equal 2 and C. Then the symmetry is UN times UN, and it has a marginal direction. Yes. Okay, so I can play this game and construct many Sicilian theories with these building blocks. So here I considered what I get on a genus-2 Riemann surface without punctures. So in this case, there are only 2 possible pen decompositions, which are these 2. And so what happens is the following. So for each pen decomposition, I get a theory. They look very different. So for each theory, there is a group of S-dualities that map the theory to itself but change the gauge couplings. Moreover, there is an S-duality map this to this. So theory that looks very different, but they describe the same physics. And then you can do all the construction you want. Okay, so it's very easy to study the Coulomb branch of these theories. So from the geometric point of view, we want to preserve A supercharges, n equal to supersymmetry in 4 dimensions. So we start with the cotangent bundle of the Riemann surface, which is a hyperkeller manifold. It preserves 1/2 of the supersymmetry. And then if we wrap M5 brains, along a generic holomorphic or monomorphic curve. We preserve another one at the supersymmetry, and then we have 8 supercharges in M theory, starting from 32. So this is the more general meromorphic curve of degree n that I can write in this space. And z is a coordinate on the Riemann surface, local coordinate. X is a section of the cotangent bundle, so it is a one form. And these phi j are holomorphic degree j differentials with some allowed poles at the punctures. Now, what are the allowed poles? So first of all, let me say that also the cyber-Witten differential is as a canonical form, is this essentially x. And the periods of the cyber-Witten differentials are the mass of BPS particles. So in particular, if I compute the period around a puncture, I get the mass of a state which is charged under the Flavo symmetry. For instance, a hypermultiplet, or more generally, some state from the TN theory. So in particular, if I want to study the conformal theory in which I have no masses, I should not get residues of lambda around the punctures. So in practice, what happens is that I allow all the possible poles in the multi-differential, in the phi j, such that x has a singularity but less than a pole. And so it means that the degree of phi j is up to j minus 1. On the other hand, I can consider a massive deformation of this theory. In this case, I allow a simple poles in x, and this means a degree j in phi. So if I do this, the Coulomb branch is simply the moduli space of multi-differential with these allowed poles. And I can use the Riemann-Roch theorem to count the number of moduli. And for instance, in the case in which my field theory is a linear quiver, I can match with the field theory and check that the result is what I expect. Any question?
What are the dpj?
Oh, yeah, sorry. D is the degree that I allow phi j to have at the puncture. So, in fact, at each puncture there is a complicated pole structure. I can allow the maximal poles to all the phi. In this case, all the phi has degree j minus 1, and this is the maximal puncture that I mentioned before that gives SUN Flavo symmetry. On the other hand, I can allow smaller poles. And in this case, I have a zoology of all the possible punctures. And in this case, the moduli are less.
So the Coulomb branches, the moduli space, is like the product of all the moduli for each phi j. Okay.
So yeah, at each puncture, you specify the pole structure that you allow. And then you count for each phi j. You have a moduli space. You sum all of them. You get the dimension of the Coulomb branch.
So above each point in the moduli space of the genus G with n punctures, you have this additional moduli space, which is giving the Coulomb branch of the conformal theory with those couplings?
Yes. Yes. And, yes, so of course, the dimension of the Coulomb branch doesn't change apart from when you shrink the Riemann surface. And great.
So when you get S-dual theories, these branches line up in a trivial way or a non-trivial way?
Say again?
If you have two S-dual theories in MGN, the representations of the Coulomb branch line up in a completely natural way, or there's an interesting map?
Well, in the geometry, so you mean an S-duality in which you do a large difference?
Yes. Right.
Well, I guess there is a map, a non-trivial map. And, well, for sure there is a non-trivial map in the field theory.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so as I said, there is a complicated pole structure that one considers at each puncture, and one can study algebraically these singularities and get the classification. However, I want to give you a simple argument that is based on this type 2B construction that for me is easier to understand. And so I want to study the puncture. So let me focus on the TN theory, because I want just to study a single puncture. So it turns out that DN theory can be realized with an alternative type 2B construction, with this PQ web of five brains. And so essentially I have, I don't know, the five brains, NS five brains, and 1.1 five brains. They intersect at this origin. So at the intersection, there is a five-dimensional theory that lives there, which is a parent theory of the TN theory, in the sense that I can compactify on S1, and then at low energy, I get the TN theory. And so I can take these five brains to be semi-infinite, very long. In this case, I understand that there is an SUN. So this is the case of T2. If they are very long, if they are N and they are semi-infinite, there is an SUN flavor symmetry living on the brains. However, I can decide to end these five brains on seven brains, which are these dots, and they are orthogonal to the blackboard. They come out. And actually, the length of these five brains is not a parameter of the low energy field theory. So I can take these five brains to infinity, and they are not there, or I can keep them at finite distance, and the field theory is insensitive to this, is the same. So, well, it's like the type 2A construction. So it has very similar properties. Yes, also in that case, you have the four brains that can end on the six brains, and the distance of the six brains is not a parameter of the field theory. But however, it is useful to keep the seven brains into the game, because if I have the seven brains, I can think of a generalization of this construction in which I end multiple five brains on the same seven brain. So for instance, I can end one five brain, I can then two five brains on the same seven brain, two five brains, three five brains, and so on. So now I want to classify all these possible configurations, and these are classified by partitions of N, that is Young tableau with N boxes. So this is the classification of the punctures.
TN corresponds to the theory what in the number of five brains?
So this is T2, and TN has N five brains here, N five brains here, N five brains here. There are three arms. Each arm is one of the puncture, or the punctures.
Right. And so the five brain data from the SUN global groups of the...
Yes. So the maximal puncture is just each five brain end on its own seven brain, and you have SUN, but you can consider this more general configuration in which you do this stuff, and they are classified by partitions of N. Okay, what is the flavor symmetry arising at such a puncture? It's very easy. Every time I have NK identical objects, I have a UNK flavor symmetry. So here I have one object, I have a U1. Here I have two identical objects, I have a U2. Here I have one object, I have a U1. And so these ranks essentially are the length of these steps in the Young tableau. Then I can just multiply all the UN factors, and then I notice that the diagonal U1 is not coupled to the field theory, so I remove it, and this is the flavor symmetry of the puncture. Okay, so I get the classification of possible punctures and the flavor symmetries of the punctures. Great. Let me do one comment. So consider the TN theory with the maximal punctures. And here it is. In the case of T2, there are the two fibrins. They are coincident. They end on two different seven brains. Then what I can do is the following. I can take this piece of five brain, break it, and move it along the seven brains, like along a railroad. So they come out of the blackboard, I can take this piece and moving out. This corresponds to the X branch of the TN theory. So if I do that, when it is sufficiently far, this is the coupled, so it is described by one free hypermultiplet. And what I'm left with is a puncture which is non-maximal. Is one of these guys. So this means that actually all the non-maximal punctures are just effective theories along the X branch of the maximal puncture. And all the Triskelions with three generic punctures are just contained in the X branch of the TN theory.
And so there are many different kinds of non-maximal punctures because you can have different numbers of segments of brain between the two seven brains?
Yes, so imagine I have, I don't know how many dots, and then I can decide to remove pieces by this way, and doing this, I can realize all these configurations. Because you have to think that all these objects are actually coincident, so I didn't draw them coincident, of course, but they are.
Can you
change in a way that behavioral useful representations of the end are classified by Young's hypothesis, or is that sort of a separate?
So this another way of saying it that generalizes from SUN to the D series and the E series, even though the E series has not been worked out, but at least to the D series, is that what you classify is embedding of SU2 into the SUN, which is the maximal punch. And this should be related to the fact that, so it's related to the fact that the non-maximal puncher are along the X branch, because the X branch of the maximal puncture should be the nilpotent, the maximal nilpotent orbit in SUN. And if you move along this nilpotent orbit, at some point you meet the small, all the other nilpotent orbits that are classified by embedding of SU2 inside the SUN. And yes, so in the case of SUN, this embedding of SU2 is described by Jahn tableau. In the case of the SO2N, they are classified another way, but yeah. Okay. Other questions? Okay, very good. So this was the first review of the N equal 2 case. Let me move to the N equal 1 case. So from the geometric point of view, it's very natural the generalization to N equal 1 for the following reason, that I start with M5 brains, I rob them on a Riemann surface, and then I want to preserve some supersymmetry, so I have to twist the theory. There are two twists I can do, the n equal 2 and the n equal 1. So let's do the n equal 1. And they just differ in the way in which I embed the spin connection into the R symmetry of the field theory. In geometrical terms, the n equal 2 twist means that I'm using a normal bundle of rank 1, and I'm not using the other three directions, because the normal bundle to the M5 branch has five real directions. In the N equal 2 case, I use two of them, so I have a rank 1 complex bundle, which is the cotangent bundle. In the N equal 1 twist, I use four of them, so it's a rank 2 complex bundle. Okay, so if we do this, if you consider this system, we expect to find a new infinite family of N equal 1 superconformed field theories, probably with marginal directions that corresponds to the geometric moduli of the problem, and with an intricate net of S dualities, like in the previous case. Now, this is very interesting because we don't know so much about S dualities in N equal 1 theories. We have cyberduality, essentially, and this dualities that I will find are generalization of cyberduality, but usually we have much less control, so it's nice to find these examples. And also I will tell you what are the geometric moduli that enters into the description of the field theory. Okay, so let me start with the field theory and then I will move to the geometry. So from the field theory point of view, there is also a natural way to deform n equal 1 to n equal 1, n equal 2 to n equal 1, which is giving a mass to the joint chiral multiplet in the n equal 2 vector multiplet. And moreover, if I consider this class of theories, this is closed under S duality, which is nice. And the reason is the following. So I want to do a deformation of the theory by this dimension 2 operators, trace phi squared, where this phi comes from the gauge sector, is the chiral multiple in the gauge vector multiples. Now, suppose I start with some theory, I do this deformation, and then I move to an S-dual theory. So in principle, I don't know what's going on, because this operator will be mapped to some other operator that can come from the TN theory, or one of these isolated superconformed field theory, on which I don't have so much control. However, I told you, and now I remind you, that the Flavor singlet chiral operators in the TN theory, the one parameterizing the Coulomb branch, start from dimension 3. So the dimension 2 operators are only contained in the gauge sector. There are no dimension 2 operators in the TN theory. So I'm sure that in any S-dual description, I'm always using these operators that come from the gauge sector.
What do you mean by S-duality once you've added the mass since the coupling's now run?
Say again?
the couple is now run, they're not, the theory isn't finite because you added a relevant deformation.
So what I mean is the following. So I start in n equal 2 with some theory, and I do some deformation. Now I can consider, okay, let's use a residual description. Now this deformation is mapped to another deformation. Now in principle this deformation could be very complicated. I mean, could come from the TN theory, and I don't know very well how to include it. But this doesn't happen. In any residual description, the deformation is always a gauge. So it's always this operator that I know what it is. And so in any residual description, I know what's going on.
But you're not saying there's a parameter space of n equals 1 theories that are all different labeled by points in MGN, or are you?
Yes. Actually, it's much larger than that. But at this stage, I don't know. At this stage, I'm starting from one theory. I'm doing this deformation. I'm telling in a second that you get a conformal theory. And then I can ask what is the conformal manifold around this fixed point. And yes, this is what I can do.
So you're saying this perturbation takes you to new non-trivial fixed points?
Yes.
N equals 1?
Yes.
Because it might have just taken you to a free theory? Or
yeah, in principle, yes, but it doesn't. Okay. Good. So what is this deformation? So n equal to supersymmetry requires this coupling between the chiral, the adjoint chiral in the vector multiplet, and the moment map. These are chiral. These are the chiral operators, which are the moment maps of the flavor symmetries, which are gauged. And for instance, if you have hypermultiplets, these moment maps are just quadratic in the flavors. Otherwise, they are some operators in the TN theory. So I add this mass deformation, and then I integrate out the fields phi, and what I get is this, I call it quartic superpotential, even if it is quadratic in the moment map, but I call it quartic because it has dimension 4 in the n equal 2 theory, and if I have usual hypermultiplets, actually this is quartic in the hypermultiplets. So what happens is that, okay, this superpotential seems to be irrelevant, but the gauge group is no longer conformal because I integrated out the adjoint, so it goes to strong coupling, and actually there is a flow, and I end up in a point in which this this moment map gets an anomalous dimension, and this superpotential becomes marginal. And so I cannot exactly prove that there is this flow. In some instances, one can prove it. For instance, if you consider super QCD with an f equal to nc, we can actually, you can actually prove studying the RG flow that you flow to this point. Here, I can only say that there is such a fixed point. Of course, it's not trivial to say that there is such a fixed point, and in fact, I have to check that the theory is conformal. So there are two things to check. I have to check that all the beta functions vanish. So in particular, the beta function for the superpotential and the beta function for the gauge couplings. So the beta function of the superpotential are controlled by the anomalous dimensions. What about the beta function for the gauge groups? So if I have a usual quiver theory, what do I do is the following. I compute the whole loop beta function with the NSVC formula. So this formula computes my beta function for the gauge coupling or loop, and it depends on two things: the representation and the anomalous dimension of the fundamental fields. The fundamental fields are the fundamental entering the Lagrangian, and so in the path integral description of the theory. However, here I have no Lagrangian sector, this TN theory, so what do? Now, fortunately, there is a generalization of the NSBC formula that computes for me what is the contribution of these non-Lagrangian sectors to the gauge beta function. And here it is. The first two terms are the usual terms in the NSBC formula. These terms come from the gauge sector. And these terms come from fundamental fields, chiral multiplets. So I want to be general. I consider a case in which I have a gauge group which with some usual fundamental matter, and then also I gauge part of the flavor symmetry of a non-Lagrangian sector. Now this K computes the contribution to the beta function that comes from the non-Lagrangian sector. What is this K? It's the Toft anomaly of the flavor symmetry that I'm gauging. So first of all, this formula makes sense in the sense that the Toft anomaly doesn't require a Lagrangian description in order to be defined. It's an anomaly, so it's perfectly defined in my case. Second thing, I can compute it in my case. So I don't want to go into the details. Let me just sketch how do I compute it.
You don't have to much time, like this K or
N. Sorry?
This for N, for N, T.
So T are the generators of the flavor symmetry, which are gauged, and they are in the representation in which I gauge them. Right? I can embed the gauge group into the flavor group in many different ways. So this TA represents the way in which I gauge, and this, I compute this anomaly, and this is the contribution to the beta function.
One example of this is just the sort of R4-1 G2 orbital to the conical.
Yes.
Is that the only example where you actually understand everything with Lagrangian?
Well, okay, there is also super QCD with NF equal to NC, which is a particular, I mean, yeah. And I would, yes, because essentially a way of studying this flow is that actually you have to take the parameter space, so get a superpotential coupling, gauge coupling, and study the flow in the limits in which you can study the flow, and then you know that this flow must end somewhere. And I mean, it's a pretty...
Yeah, the N equals 1 theory never goes through weak coupling, at least in that case. So even if you do this count parameter counting,
yes,
you don't actually know the gamma functions ever land you on the fixed surface, right?
Well, you can go close to, for instance, weakly coupled points, and you know how is the...
Even though you have a cortex superpotential, you can go close to weakly coupled points? Because I would think that means you have an anomalous dimension.
So, for instance, this cortex superpotential is irrelevant, so but it depends where you start. But it can start going to weak coupling, but at some point, if the gauge coupling becomes enlarged, then it also goes to strong coupling. So, well, you can study various corners. Or this diagram, and so this is, for instance, what Strassler did in his review. He's studying various corners, and then using the fact that the lines of the algae flow must end somewhere, he can argue that you end up somewhere. Of course, here you cannot do that, it's too messy. But, So strictly speaking, for me, it's fine enough to start from the n equal 1 fixed point and study what happens there. Okay, so just how to compute this Toft anomaly. So I start in n equal 2. This is my R symmetry, U1 times SU2. When I switch on the mass deformation, this is a particular U1 inside here, which is preserved. And this particular U1 is the U1R in the infrared. So the U1R is not accidental, but it lives in the UV. I can follow the RG flow of this U1R, and since in the n equal 2 case I know a lot of things, I can compute the Toft anomaly in n equal 2 and follow it to n equal 1. So I compute this Toft anomaly, and first of all I can check the gauge beta function are 0, so this the gauge group are conformal. Second, I can compute the R charge and then the anomalous dimension of the Bommet maps, and I can check also the superpotential is marginal. So, okay, I can check this fixed point exists. I can do more. I can study, so once I have one of these fixed points, I can study a conformal manifold around this fixed point, so the number of exactly marginal deformation, and I use the argument by Lie and Strassler. So first of all, I write down all the marginal operators at the fixed point. They can be quadratic in the moment maps, product of moment maps from different KN theories, deformation of the gauge coupling. If I have hypermultiplets, they are quartic in the hypermultiplets. I write down on this list. And then, so first of all, I count the number of real relations that come from imposing the vanishing of the beta function. So since they depend on the anomalous dimension, which are real, these are real relations. Well, I want something complex, and in fact, I also have to count the number of phases which are removed by field redefinitions. This is very similar to a Keller quotient construction. Once I do this, I get the dimension of the conformal manifold. For instance, in the case of no puncture, I get this, 6g minus 6. With maximal punctures, I get 6g minus 6 plus 2n. So the first observation is that these are bigger than in the n equal 2 case. So in the n equal 2 case, this dimension was 3g minus 3 that matches with the number of complex structure module space of the Riemann surface. Now it's double, 6g minus 6. And with the punctures, there was a plus n, because it's the position of the puncture. Here there is a plus 2n. It is double. So there must be more geometric moduli entering to the problem. I will tell you in a moment what they are. The last piece of information from the field theory I want to tell you is the central charges. So I have a superconformal field theory. There are central charges in the trace anomaly. We can compute them from field theory, and here are the expressions. They go like n cubed. They are equal at the leading order, consistent with the fact that there is a gravity dual. But there are interesting subleading corrections that I want to reproduce from supergravity. Okay, so now I'm going to move to the geometric side. So do we have any question? How much time do we have?
Like 15 more minutes.
Okay, so gravity dual. So let's go to the geometric side. So the starting point for the Kostratian gravity dual is the solution by Mandelson and Nunez in 2000 with n equal 1 twist. So the solution describes, it is a solution of 11 dimensional supergravity, and it describes the near horizon geometry of NM fibrains wrapped on a Riemann surface with n equal 1 twist. So it's got what we need. What is the shape of this solution? There is an ADS5 factor, which is warped, and this is consistent with the fact that the theory is conformal. There is an hyperbolic plane, which is also warped. Then there is a squashed S3, and there is an interval. So the squashed S3 preserves U1 times SU2, and moreover, this squashed S3 is fibered over the hyperbolic plane according to the n equal 1 twist. Okay, then we want to get a compact Riemann surface from this, and so we mod out the hyperbolic plane by a Fuchsian group, which is a subgroup of SL2R, and it contains the 3G minus 3 complex structure moduli of the Riemann surface. However, we get a puzzle, because we have this SU2 symmetry, which commutes with supersymmetry, so it should correspond to some flavor symmetry in the field theory. However, believe me, if you look at the field theory, you don't see any trace of this flavor symmetry, so there's a puzzle. The answer is that actually I can consider a further deformation of this solution, which preserve n equal 1 supersymmetry and also preserve conformality. And this deformation corresponds to switching on SU2 Wilson lines, which in fact break SU2. So what I mean for these Wilson lines, I mean that instead of cutting just the hyperbolic plane, I consider the full bundle of the squash sphere over the hyperbolic plane, let me call it E, and then I cut the full bundle by an enrichment of the Fuchsian group by elements of SU2. So this is still isomorphic to gamma, but for each element of gamma, I attach an element of SU2. So in practical terms, this means that when I glue together pieces of the hyperbolic plane to make a compact Riemann surface, I include some twist of this squash S3 using one element of this SU2. And now I go and I count the dimension of the moduli space of a Riemann surface with SU2 in some lines, and this is a dimension 6g minus 1. So this matches the field theory computation. Well, generically they are non-abelian Wilson lines, so they break it completely.
But if you choose trivial ones, can you bind the field theory without the
SU2? So, first of all, you can consider commuting Wilson lines, then preserve U1, and then you can see that for particular choice of the couples in the field theory, you find this U1. Then you can switch on the Wilson lines, you should have the SU2, and we weren't able to see this SU2 in the field theory, which probably is realized just as a quantum effect at the fixed point. But at least the U1 can be seen. Also, you can compute the dimension of the submanifold, where you see the U1, and it matches, so it must be correct.
So the half of this 6g minus 1 are the ones which parameterize the Wilson lines. And
yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And this is in a flat SU2 connection,
yes,
over H2.
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, you can think in the following way. So as I said, we have the Riemann surface, and we want to use a rank 2 complex bundle. Mm-hmm. We want to preserve n equal 1 supersymmetry. So I want U2 transition function. Mm-hmm. But I want that the U1 part in this U2 is equal to the cotangent to the canonical bundle on the Riemann surface. So the U1 is fixed, but the SU2 part is not fixed, and it is a geometric modulus, and this with some lines on the moduli. Yes. Oh, it means that the metric is not the round one.
Oh.
So in the round case it is SO4, but the metric is not that one, and so there is a reduced symmetry. Mm. Good. I can consider also the maximal punctures, and in this case what happens? So the gravity dual of the punctures was constructed by Gayot and Maldacena. Okay, some supergravity solution. However, the case of the maximal puncture is particularly simple because it is simply a Z and orbifold singularity. There is no funny metric. And so in particular the orbifold group acts on Z, where Z is some local coordinates on the Riemann surface. These two coordinates are complex coordinates on the normal boundary, and it acts as the usual way. It is an AN minus 1 singularity. Now, if I consider the N equal 1 twist alone, it implies that when I, so this Z is centered around the puncture, so when I go around the puncture, I have this action on the normal boundary because the N equal 1 twist. Now, these two expressions are compatible only if I switch on an SU2 monodromy with fixed conjugacy class, which is this conjugacy class. So this means that, okay, I can switch on monodromies around the punctures. Now, a monodromy will have three real parameters, which is bad because I want a complex manifold. And in fact, the conjugacy class is fixed, and so I'm left with one complex parameter, which is actually a P1. Anyway, it's a complex parameter, and so then I can count the moduli space of Riemann surface with punctures and SU2 with some line and constrained monodromies, and I get this 2n. So 1n is the position of the puncture, the other one is the monodromy.
So is this something like turning the SU2 bundle locally into an SO3 bundle? What you are doing, is that what the additional parameters come from?
This additional parameter comes from I have the puncture, so it's a point that I have to remove, and so I can specify still a monodromy of SU2. And now, the thing that a priori is not obvious is that the conjugacy class is fixed, right? You can say, okay, this is a generic element of SU2. Now what happens is that if you take a generic element of SU2, your singularity is localized at the origin of the normal bundle. However, in order to have some flavor symmetry, I need a singularity that propagates along the normal bundle, so all along this X2 direction. And so this probably is at the origin of this fact that the conjugacy class is fixed. And it's a physical motive. So from M theory, it's easy to understand this constraint from a mathematical point of view. I don't know. Okay, so then I just want to show you this computation. I will be sketchy of the central charges. So we saw there are these central charges from the field theory, the trace anomaly, and we want to check if they agree with supergravity, because considering the subleading correction, I think it is a non-trivial check that the field theory is the correct one. So the leading contribution is just the radius of ADS5, and in fact you can compute in that it matches. And moreover, the leading order A is equal to C, as we expect from ADS-CFT. However, there are disabling contributions, and they must come from curvature corrections in 11-dimensional supergravity. Now, these corrections were considered by Witten and then Harvey, Minasian, and Moore, and they were packaged in the anomaly polynomial of the 6-dimensional theory. So this polynomial is an 8 form, and it encodes all the anomalies of the six-dimensional the n equal 2, 0 theory. It is an 8 form which is written in terms of the second and first Pontryagin class of the normal and tangent bundle to the M5 brains. So what we want to do is simply to take this polynomial, integrate it on the Riemann surface, get a 6 form, and then compare this 6 form with the anomaly polynomial of four-dimensional theory and rid off the anomalies. And okay, so this is the generic expression for the anomaly polynomial in four dimensions. What is this F? This F is a line bundle, and I need it because I want to highlight in this polynomial that describes all the anomalies, I want to highlight the U1R symmetry. So I want to compute the U1R anomaly. I know how the U1R is embedded in the SO5R of the that acts on this normal bundle. And so I do this shift, and then I compare with this expression. So essentially the first term is just a soft anomaly of the R symmetry, is described by this one. This is the gravitational anomaly, and it tends to the first chance class and the Pontryagin class of this time. So what I do, I take this A form, I integrate on the Riemann surface, I compare, and I get the anomalies of U1R. Here it is. First one is the gravitational anomaly, the second one is the Toft anomaly. And then I exploit SUSY, supersymmetry, so I use non-formula that relates the U1R with the central charges, and I get an exact matching with the field theory. And so I think this is a non-trivial check that the field theory is the correct one. Okay, so okay, I wanted to mention another thing, but maybe I can skip it.
No, why don't you take, I don't know, how much more time do you need? I mean, we've been asking.
Well, even 5 minutes?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So let me just mention this. So what I want to mention is that one can use the same computation to shed some light of this 2D, 4D correspondence. I'm not going to prove anything, I just want to show this other computation. So first of all, what is this 2D, 4D correspondence? So these people, Adaga, Toto, Tachikawa, observe the following thing. So we start with M5 brains wrapped on a Riemann surface, and we get some four-dimensional theory. Now, with this theory, we can compute the Nekrasov partition function. What is the Nekrasov partition function? So I do an equivariant deformation of my theory. It means that I consider the Euclidean theory, which lives on R4, and then I do a deformation by a rotation of R2 and R2, by two parameters, epsilon 1 and epsilon 2. And this deformation is needed in order to localize the instantons at the fixed points of the action on the moduli space. And since they localize, then the computation is much simpler. So, okay, one do this computation and compute the Nekrasov partition function. So what they observed is that this Nekrasov partition function is equal to the conformal blocks of a Liouville, or generically TODA, they consider Liouville, theory that lives on the Riemann surface we used to obtain the theory. So there is a relation between the four dimensions, so we have the five brains. We can either think that we compactify on the Riemann surface and we get a four-dimensional theory, or we compactify on a four-manifold and we get a two-dimensional theory on the Riemann surface.
And what is Liouville-TODA theory? It means you couple Liouville-TODA
to single
planes?
Sorry, Liouville is Liouville theory. Now, in Liouville you have a single field. There is a generalization in which you think of this single field as the Cartan of SU2. And then you generalize to, so it's the natural generalization. Okay, and then there is an identification between the ratio of these parameters in the equivalent deformation and the central charge in the Liouville or TODA theory. And the central charge is controlled by this parameter B, which is the coupling in the Liouville theory. So, okay, this is a very interesting correspondence because we can use it to compute the Vevo-Wilson Toft group operators. We can use it to compute the Vevo surface operators, very mysterious objects, but we can compute this observator exactly, at least in a parameter expansion, and probably more. Now, there were attempts to prove this correspondence, and for instance, there was a paper by Diagram and Pfaff, and there was another paper by Bonelli and Tanzini. I don't think they really proved, but they did a very nice job in that direction. And for instance, one thing that one can show is that the Coulomb branch, which is the space of multi-differentials on the Riemann surface, is equal to the set of classical solutions of Liouville and Toda. But to the classical solutions. So in particular, this computation doesn't tell anything about the central charge of the theory that you get. So,
there's a nice picture of a classical solution of integrable theories related to curves.
Uh-huh.
Like
the
respect of curves.
Yes. Yeah, it's this story.
Okay.
Yeah, probably they took known things and they put them together. Okay. It's a short paper, they just observed. So, yeah, in particular, you can relate. So, the space of multidifferential is related to the Hitchin system. The Hitchin system is related to Toda. This was, it was known. So, yeah, they put together known things. Okay, so, but still, this just, this, so in particular, with this argument, I don't get the central charge. And the central charge is the first thing that give me quantum properties of the theory, because at the classical level I can do a Fourier definition and shift the central charge. So just the only thing I want to show you is that actually one can reproduce this central charge using the same computation before. So starting with the anomalies, anomaly polynomial of the six-dimensional theory, compactify on a four-manifold and get the central charge. So I will be very sketchy. So this is the setup. We compactify the M5 branch on sigma times X4, sigma is in my surface, and now let me consider a generic four-manifold. I take again the anomaly polynomial. Here is the generalization to the ADE series. There is the rank of the group, the degree, the dimension, the dual constant number. And then I do some twist. So the twist is more involved than before. So first of all, I have to twist to embed the spin connection of X4 into the R symmetry, and then I will have also to embed the spin connection of this guy into the R symmetry. So first of all, I do this. As before, so I do this in such a way to preserve 0,2 supersymmetry in two dimensions. Then I have an R symmetry in two dimensions because I have 0,2 supersymmetry. So I highlight this R symmetry. I integrate on X4. And when I do this integral, what matters is the Euler number and the integrated first quantity in class. I do my integral. I compare. So this time I get a 4 form, which is the anomaly polynomial of a two-dimensional theory. I compare with what I know is the anomaly polynomial. And in fact, the U1R gives me the right charge. There are two charges, right? So here I have a U1R, and so it gives me the right charge, and the gravitational anomaly gives me the difference. I compare, and I get this result. They are different, and then depends on the Euler number and Poynting class. However, the Nekrasov partition function is an equivariant integral on R4. So really, what I want to consider is the characteristic classes in the equivariant sense, and I want to do an equivariant integral. So I do this, I use the localization formula, and I get that these are the classes. The only number is 1, and the first quantity in class is this number. If I don't do the equivariant integral, and I try to compute on R4, they are trivial, of course. And then I plug in the previous expression. And then I remember that there is a second step in the twist. So far, we embedded the spin connection of X4 into the R symmetry, but also we have to embed the spin connection of the Riemann surface into the R symmetry, because this is the way in which we constructed the four-dimensional theories. When we do that, this change in the right sector, and in particular, since now the Riemann surface is the spacetime, this twisting is a topological twist, and so this central charge goes to zero. However, the left-hand sector is untouched, and this is the result I get. And if I do this identification, I exactly reproduce the central charge of the Toda theory. Okay, this is just a computation. I'm not proving anything, but I think it's nice to see that we can exactly reproduce this quantum property of the theory.
So what were the conditions on X4? Was it a compact full manifold, or
Let's see. Yeah, probably you need that it is complex. Apart from that, it's very general, because yes, you need that it is complex. What is it general? So when you do this twist, essentially you always preserve 0,2 supersymmetry in two dimensions. I mean, you can preserve more if the manifold is special, but yeah, I think you need that it is complex.
You mentioned a relation between the classical solutions of some of the Miltota theory and the space of Coulomb branch configurations of N equals 2 theory. So when you quantize that, you think you might actually sum over the space of classical solutions. Mm-hmm. Eversoff's partition function is associated with integrals over the Coulomb branch or with fixed theories?
No, it is associated. So the Eversoff partition function is for a specific value of the Coulomb branch parameter.
Yeah.
And in fact, this is mapped to the conformal blocks in which essentially the momentum along the tube is fixed. Then you can compute, so what you can do is integrate, so take the Eversoff partition function, which is chiral, take the other chiral part, put them together and integrate over the Coulomb branch parameters. Mm-hmm. In this way you get Peston partition function. Mm-hmm. And this corresponds in the Liouville theory to taking the conformal block, the chiral, the conjugate of the conformal block, integrate of the momentum in the tubes, and then getting the partition function of Liouville. Yeah. Okay, so this was the last thing, so let me just conclude with some future direction that I find interesting. So the first thing would be nice to do is studying the X branch of the N equal 2 theory. The X branch is a classical object, it's not quantum corrected, so it's not so complicated as the Coulomb branch. Nevertheless, as I told you, there must be a very nice mathematical structure in this X branch, so probably it would be nice to work it out. Moreover, it would be nice to study more the N equal 1 theory, and for instance, one could think of the following. Instead of starting with the n equal 2,0 theory and do the n equal 1 twist, one could directly start with the n equal 1,0 theory in 6 dimensions and compactify it. So I don't know what other theory you can get. Then, of course, this 2D for the correspondence is very interesting. It would be nice to have a proof, but also study it. And, for instance, using this to study better surface operators, probably domain walls, and so on. And then the last thing, let me conclude your question, Mark. So, can we consider a usual compactification of these M5 branches, not an equivalent compactification, a usual compactification on a 4-manifold, and in this way getting a gravity dual of large N Toda theory, probably a supersymmetric version of it? This, I think, it would be nice. So, okay.
Thank you very much. Any more questions? We already asked enough, so thanks again.
Thank you.